For the past decade, Susan Krieger's world has been slowly slipping into darkness. She's not completely blind, at least not yet, but her vision is bad enough to make her legally blind. And although she prizes her self-sufficiency, she recently got a guide dog, Tila, who is now her constant companion. Now, all of this raises some basic questions about how Susan Krieger thinks of herself, about her competence, her self-worth, and the fine line between light and darkness. Krieger writes about these questions in a collection of essays called Traveling Blind.
I have a kind of blindness to do with the autoimmune disease that has affected my eyes called Birdshot retinochoroidopathy. This is an eye condition that I've had for about 14 years now that is caused by swelling and scarring on my retina and choroid, and that gives me blind spots in my central vision. I have blind spots on my peripheral vision also, and plenty of distortions and interferences with my vision. So I see somewhat, but I have many areas in which I don't see.
What strikes me is that in some ways, this is almost harder. And I don't know that it would be easier to be completely blind, because you can still see some things. But you're not always sure exactly what's there, are you?
Exactly. Life is a guessing game very often. As I walk down the street, you know, traveling with my guide dog, and I'm looking around, and I'm not sure is something I see ahead, a dog or a child or a garbage can.
I know that one of the things that is a constant source of irritation for you, because you seem so confident, I guess, is that people will often see you walking with Tila, your guide dog, and ask if you're training her.
Yes. Very soon after I came home with my new guide dog several years ago, I found that frequently people would ask me this question, are you training that dog? And at first I thought, oh, I must be doing it wrong. Am I giving her the right signals, stopping at the curb properly? But it soon became evident to me that people, when they were asking about the dog, were really asking about me. And they looked at me and they thought, I don't know if she's sighted or if she's blind, because I think perhaps I didn't fit a stereotype. And so they would say, are you training that dog?
It's interesting, isn't it, that people feel as though they own that little piece of you because you're walking with a dog. They wouldn't stop me on the street and ask me if I was trying on a new pair of shoes, but they
right.
feel quite comfortable asking you. And I suppose because they do want to know. You don't wear dark glasses. You don't stare at the ground.
I do. Actually, it was happening to me even when I wore the dark glasses, because I tried to make it stop happening. So I wore dark glasses. I started to stare at the ground. I started to do more of the behaviors people expected of a blind person, which may have helped me sometimes. You know, I think many people are blind to a varying degree and walk around, but it's an invisible disability. When it becomes visible, which is what happens when you're guided by a guide dog, then some of these questions do come up. So I was aware that even though I try to fit the stereotypes, let's say by wearing dark glasses or occasionally I try to stumble on purpose just to avoid the question, I still didn't fit the stereotypes in some ways, and people were curious. And a dog makes people friendly. They step forward. They try to interact.
Well, and that's, I think, the other interesting part of this. It is not only blindness that you have begun to examine. It's all aspects of personality. Because if this kind of thing, which is, you'd think, obvious enough, can raise questions, then you begin to think about other parts of your life, your relationships with other people, your history, the things you've decided to do. And it strikes me that that's part of what you're writing about, is that blindness is a physical manifestation of our relationship with the community around us.
Yes, I think so. That's a good point. It isn't in isolation. It isn't something that just happens in a medical sense with my eyes, for instance. As soon as it starts to happen, I'm re-examining myself. Am I blind? Am I sighted? How blind am I? How blind am I tomorrow as opposed to yesterday? What do I have to do to be competent? And I have to deal all the time with that issue of competence, you know, how to do things when I no longer see very well. And how to deal with other people when they have questions and when I must ask for assistance. For instance, I write about airport stories because we've had many adventures as we travel in airports that are unusual.
Well, give me an example, for instance. What happens when you and Tila go traveling by air?
Well, the very first time she and I went on an airline trip alone, I went up to the desk and I had reserved a bulkhead seat so that she'd have room to lie on the floor at my feet. And the person behind the counter at the airline said to me, I can't let you have that seat. And I thought, but I reserved it. And she said, A person sitting in that seat needs to be able to read and follow directions and help other persons in the case of an emergency. Now, I thought, well, I can't read that print, but someone could read it to me. A more blind person could read a braille. I can follow directions. I can help other people. And I imagine and my dog could just lead everyone to safety from the downed plane. So I kind of thought, and I said to the airline desk person, I said, that's discriminatory. I can help other people in all this. And she eventually let me have the seat. I got on the plane, but they wouldn't let me sit in it. And eventually I was told there that my dog would block the aisle because this particular bulkhead was an exit row. And the flight attendant on the plane said, you can sit anywhere else. Please take another seat. You can have two seats. You can have a whole row. It was a Saturday night. The plane was empty. And I gradually realized that in the future I needed to say, I would like to reserve a bulkhead row seat if possible, but I have to make sure it's not an exit row. So this has been somewhat of a learning process, but also how do you deal with all these people?
There's also a freedom that you can have with Tila by your side that it's simply not possible otherwise. Part of the book is a story of taking a trip into New Mexico, and there is an early morning walk you described with Tila. I wonder, in fact, if you'd just tell us a little bit about that, because I get the feeling that it is a walk you simply wouldn't have been able to take in the last decade, at least, if you didn't have the guide dog.
Right, right, certainly. I have a morning walk in a desert town that I didn't know, where I didn't know my way around. I didn't know north, south, east, west streets. I'm doing the things that I was taught in guide dog school to do with my dog. Stop at the curbs, count the crossings, remember them, come back. So on this walk, I'm beginning to feel a little sad because I can't just be so totally free as I was before. And then I sort of pet the dog and I realize, I think about how this is my freedom now, this dog. Where we can go together, we go. And where we can't, we don't get. And I'm just very grateful for this companionship, even as lost as I may be in certain circumstances. And the walk turns out well because we do eventually, after getting lost, find our way back. And I feel very accomplished because it was hard for me. You know, I'm used to finding my way with visual clues. And as my vision decreases, I can do that less and less well. So I have to learn these other ways, counting, remembering, trying to identify some landmark that I'll be able to notice again.
What do you anticipate now about the ways in which your vision will change? Do you think that there is a different world waiting for you?
That's a good question. I think my vision, given my eye condition, it just gradually worsens. So it's not something that I would expect to be totally dramatic, that all of a sudden I go to total darkness. But it does gradually get darker and gradually have more of these imperfections. But it also poses certain delights. I can rest and be more comfortable in the greater darkness because I don't have to strain to see, and I can just move more fully as a blind person. I'm often moving in this shadowy in-between world in which things are neither black nor white, totally there, totally not. And somehow I think that in general, this split between sighted and blind, black and white, is a little deceptive. You know, sighted people are partly blind people are partly sighted. And I don't just mean visual sight, but how we see, how we know. And I'm trying to acknowledge the broad range of what vision may be.
Susan Krieger is the author of Traveling Blind, Adventures in Vision, with a guide dog by my side.